depending on your definition of a somber day, it is a somber day out in Phoenix, Arizona. Lance Blanks got his dismissal on Monday. Press conference with Lon Babby happened technically today, but you're listening to this on a Wednesday. But, you know, Lance met the press and told them why it all went down. But nonetheless, episode 20 of the Phoenix Suns podcast here on Bright Side of the Sun. Chris Habas back in Phoenix. Jim Kochenour on the line as always. Jim, glass half empty or half full? How are we feeling about Lance Blanks being being basically told to take his ball and go home?
The glass is twice as large as it needs to be. I'm glad that you're back. So you were big time in us there for a little bit, and now you're back here to record this podcast with me. We had a week off, which is fine because the Suns basically took most of the season off. So I think we can be excused for a week without providing the routinely exceptional product that we put out here over the airwaves. As far as the Lance Blanks things go, you know, this is something that I saw coming. This wasn't surprising to most people. They knew of the potential of his dismissal based off of some of the things that had gone awry with personnel decisions, some of the internal player evaluations, talent evaluations, where certain people coveted certain players and not everybody agreed and wasn't on the same page. And the biggest takeaway that I had out of this so far, and it kind of parallels the old situation with Amari, was they decided not to re-sign Amari. They didn't match the Knicks' offer. They didn't make that effort. And so that was kind of turning the page from that era of Suns basketball to the next. And for people that said, well, that was a good decision to not attempt to re-sign Amari, not to match, well, then what followed that was a complete tire fire. And so you can't really say, yay, we dodged that bullet, because then you got caught up in a drive-by. And this is the same situation with Lance Blanks. And I think that it's good that he is no longer with the organization, because I felt he was doing an embarrassingly inadequate job in his role, but they haven't accomplished anything yet. Now, what they will accomplish something is if they make sure they get the right hire, get the right guy in there, and then they can actually do something positive moving forward. But one of my favorite quotes from John Wooden is, never confuse activity with achievement. And we've had the activity. The activity is Lance Blanks' dismissal, but we haven't had any achievement yet. So I don't cheer the activity. I'll cheer the achievement when and if it comes.
Yeah, and as you said, I was quote-unquote big time, and I just being out in Portland, it was kind of ironic that I was rubbing shoulders and elbows with NBA general managers while the Suns were contemplating getting rid of their own. I didn't realize that I would leave a gymnasium full of general managers on Saturday night to fly back home to Phoenix here and see that there's a gymnasium out here in Arizona that has zero general managers, and that's kind of the situation they're in right now. And, you know, like Lon Babby talked about, I've been saying, I think this from the jump, is that I'm more of a believer in Lon Babby than I think most people are. I think that from a president of basketball operations standpoint, I think he's fine, and I think he'll do a very adequate job. And I think the first couple of years were the learning curve, and now I think going forward is going to be really the benchmark for him. We got to figure it out. He set his baseline, and now we got to see where he goes going forward. And the thing that's going to define him as the president of basketball ops, whether it'll be a lifetime job for him or whether it's going to be a, you know, 2-year job for him because he got that extension, is who he brings in as his general manager. And I mean, there's obviously lots of choices, and it's easy to speculate, and that's not something I think we should do because that's kind of irresponsible. But I think that, you know, next week we should hopefully have a decision on that, even though Lon basically said that he's very comfortable going into the draft process with the status quo, which is a little scary. I'm not saying that the guys that aren't able to look at talent and go, he's good and he's not good, but to go into an NBA draft without, and at the start of an offseason, basically without a general manager, I mean, that's not something that is ideal for anybody. Last time the Suns didn't have a general manager, they shelled out tons of money on Hakeem Warrick and Josh Childress. So forewarning, guys, we probably want a general manager before any decisions are made. But yeah, you know, rubbing elbows with a gymnasium full of general managers, and I mean, lots of candidates that they can look at, lots of basketball minds, which is what they want, to come in here and replace Lance Blanks. That's what he was supposed to be. I mean, it's not that long ago that Lon was on the radio wave saying that he is a talent evaluator. He's a draft expert. He's a talent person. That's who, you know, Lance Blanks is. you know, two back-to-back 13 picks. You don't get superstars at 13, but to come away with two 13 picks and have Markieff Morris and to have Kendall Marshall, two guys that are, you know, let's be honest, if we put them on playoff teams, they're probably somewhere between the 8th and the 12th man on most playoff teams. So, you know, you see that they get minutes out here. Would they be getting minutes, though, if they're playing on, like, New York or Boston or Miami or Oklahoma City? Probably not. So, you know, those are his two biggest moves. And then, obviously, the signing of Michael Beasley in the offseason was another thing that's going to be on his resume is the big things he did out here in Phoenix, none of which measured up well, and that's part of the reason why he's not here. And now it's up to Lon Babby to make the decision on who is the basketball mind that's going to be running this team, making the decision on the coaches, the players, the roster, the draft, and it's going to be a trickle-down effect. So this first decision is probably going to be the most important, in my opinion.
I was with you, actually, in terms of believing that Babby was well-suited in his part of that bifurcated cognoscenti that they had at the top of the pyramid there with him, with Blanks and he being the split up between the PBO and the GM position. I wasn't sold on Lance Blanks. I didn't like that, but I think that Babby did have some on-the-job training his first 2 years. The Suns have made a practice, it seems, in recent years of hiring people without much prior experience, just like they did with Hunter after that. But I agree, Babby had some a learning curve. He had some hiccups along the way, and I think that that will give him the experience he needs through those trials, tribulations, transgressions to improve and do better in his job. I think he's a very smart and motivated person, and I think that in his capacity with that, I am dubious that he can't be successful there. I really think that that's something that he should excel in his role there. I don't know about the situation with Hunter moving forward. It was interesting, and I'm not a big believer in Hunter, but I have no idea at the same time. I don't. Maybe he could be a coach, a good coach, maybe not. There's no book written on him to know one way or the other. That was kind of a blindside hiring for a lot of us, even though there was also some discussion that had kind of been in the works. But Babby said, not at the press conference, but afterwards when he was on KTAR and he was questioned about what the plan was for Lindsey Hunter, and he said that, you know, he was still being considered for the permanent head coaching position, that he would be a candidate. But then when it was brought up about the GM and how that went, Babby said, well, if we did have a coaching candidate that was a clear-cut, obvious win situation, then that would be something that we would explore prior to the hiring of the GM, which basically tells me that Lindsey Hunter would be a settle situation, because he's already said if we find somebody we really like, then we'll hire him. And that means, obviously, that they don't really like Hunter. So that was kind of interesting, the takeaway that I had there. So moving forward, you got Babby. He's in place. He's at the helm. And now we need to figure out what's going on with the vacated position and the other tenuously vacated position, the one that's kind of up in the air, but maybe not up in the air, but I still think is completely up in the air.
Well, two things I want to piggyback off of that before we jump topics here. The first thing is, when you look at the situation with, you know, the general manager, ideally, as a fan, I mentioned it, I think that they need to have their general manager put in place. The NBA draft combine in Chicago is the I believe the 16th and the 17th of May. So we're three and a half weeks or so away from that. I think you have to have your general manager in place about 2 weeks before that. So I would say somewhere between May the 1st and May the 5th that you need to come down to a decision on who your general manager is, which gives you about a week and a half to do due diligence, do interviews, and then make the calls to guys and let them know, hey, you know, you're who we want, and see if they accept it. Is that something that you feel is, like, what would be your timeline? I just gave mine somewhere between May 1st and May 5th in that week to 10 days range for these guys. They've obviously probably had a jump on it. They've already probably got a list of guys that they want, and they've probably already fielded phone calls from guys that are interested in the job, I would imagine. But what would be your ideal timeline as a Suns fan and as a different mind than mine in terms of having a general manager in place? When would you want to see that happen?
Absolutely, sooner rather than later. And I agree with you. The team would have to be pathetically unprepared to not have a list of candidates that they would like to reach out to after Lance Blank's termination. That would be something. Ron Babby's not that type of person that would be that egregiously unprepared. So I have to imagine that they had already been planning up to this point, and I guess maybe that would be more of that subterfuge that they practice from time to time there, because I can see Lon Babby there in the dark tunnels of USAC communicating with Robert Sarver and maybe some of his other minions, because obviously Lance Blanks wasn't involved in making the list of the people that would replace him, so that wouldn't have been the situation. And the Suns have tried to be tight-lipped, play things as close to the vest as possible with a lot of these personnel decisions and players' decisions to draft picks, all that type of stuff, and have made some moves that not a lot of us really saw coming. And so I imagine that this is the same type of situation and that they are already working exhaustively to, you know, name a replacement at this point to find the person that's going to take over this position.
And now, like I said, just quick two-parter before we jump topics here is, when you're thinking general manager, and I'm going to let you answer this first, when you're thinking general manager of the Phoenix Suns, the next general manager, and I don't want a name per se, but what is the type of person that you want as this general manager? We've dealt with all the firsts. Lon Babby was an agent and then was a first-time executive. Lance Blanks was a assistant to general managers, first-time general manager. Lindsey Hunter is a, you know, first-time coach on any level at all. Those are the first 41 games he's ever coached in his life, outside of, you know, his kids and small leagues, I would imagine. What kind of general manager are you considering or would you want to see brought into the Phoenix Suns organization? Because obviously the general manager, as I mentioned before, creates the trickle-down effect of what the coach will look like and what the roster will look like.
Well, I'm actually eminently qualified to answer this question. I've been prepared because we had talked about it, and you said that you kind of glanced at it, skimmed through it real quick. But I posted a resume online, an application for the Phoenix Suns vacant GM position, and obviously that's a tongue-in-cheek type of situation. I don't have any type of illusions that I would actually be considered for that job. Although Lon did say at the press conference that they would look at any person in terms of it. So he left that open to where maybe he's reading my resume right now and getting ready to give me a call. But some of the attributes and skills I talked about in there that I have that I think what I would like in the next GM is, he needs to be a team player. He needs to get with the staff in there, the other talent evaluators, other people that know the situation around the league with players there and through the draft and scouting. And that needs to be, I think, a team situation where he has no problem seeking advice from these people on a situation where he lacks experience or lacks conviction on an issue, and that he has the ability to actually defer to someone else if they're in one of these discussions and somebody makes a point that is superior to what he believes. That happens to me at work all the time, where somebody comes up with an idea and I'm able to say, well, hey, that was better than the idea I had, let's run with it. So ultimately, with all that stuff, he's going to be like the final say in terms of that. But I think you have to have that broad perspective there. And a couple other things besides that kind of accountability, I want them to be able to admit fault. And we've seen that kind of happen with the organization, where you know, they got rid of Turkoglu. That was a mistake. And that was obviously something kind of prior to where this new regime came in. But then, like, with the Goran Dragic thing again, where they traded him in a first-round pick, and then they repented and brought him back, and that was a way of admitting fault. And so they've shown to be that good that way. But I'd like a person that's actually honest, you know, painfully honest, as much as they can be. So obviously there's some things within the inner workings, and you can't reveal your hand and everything like that. But in situations where they can be honest, I think they should be as forthcoming as possible. The fans, the Suns fans, they're not stupid. I'm not stupid. And so we don't like being treated as if we are stupid. It's an insult, some of the ways that this has been handled, with the way things have been conveyed to us. And I also think that they need somebody that can handle the press, the fans, the media better. Because Lance Blanks, he was Blank Man. He was the invisible man. He wasn't able to interact with the fans on any level like Lon Babby has been able to do, to where people can kind of, you know, associate with him. They can have some kind of, you know, relationship, even though obviously it's not like a personal relationship, but kind of get an idea of who he is a little bit as a person. And that was something that Blanks was abhorrent with, and even has been mentioned by people within the organization. And then the last thing that I had also put up that was kind of tongue-in-cheek is, you know, somebody that knows the difference between their ass and a hole in the ground. I know a lot of people haven't really contemplated this because it's been largely kind of a celebratory festive mood over Lance Blank's firing, but there is always the possibility out there that the Suns could get somebody either equally as bad or worse. I don't think a lot of people have really put any thought to that, but that's absolutely a possibility.
Yeah, yeah, and we briefly talked about that as well before we jumped on here, is that, you know, it's easy to celebrate that, you know, what is the old adage, you know, the devil you know versus the devil you don't, and it's very easy that the devil you don't could end up being this amazing person and kind of, you know, bring you back up and rise you from the ashes, Suns fans, but it very easily could be worse than what was already out here. But yeah, I mean, the reason why I asked that, and I'll kind of pose this out to the Bright Side listeners and readers, et cetera, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, feel free to get into the comment section there and go to town on this. But I mean, would you want an analytical GM? Do you want Daryl Morey? You know, that kind of a guy? Do you want a, you know, Danny Ainge, a look and feel, and just kind of gets the idea for who he wants and builds his guys through trades and the draft, et cetera? Do you want just a straight scout, a guy who just comes up from the video room and knows talent and knows, you know, knows who these guys are and kind of builds up his team? That what kind of a general manager do you want, or do you want a coach GM, or do you want one of these fantasies and weird fairy tales that they're telling on the radio out there of Grant Hill coming in or Charles Barkley being a coach GM, or, you know, being the GM and having someone else as a coach? Those are just, I get what radio is for. It's to get people to listen, but holy cow, are those far-fetched. So I, you know, as you guys, as listeners, as fans, you know, you guys are the voice of the team. What do you want to see in your general manager, which therefore creates your coach, which creates your roster, which creates your identity, aside from being a personable person that'll occasionally smile, see fans, be around, get on the radio and talk to us folk? You know, that other than that, what kind of a general manager do you want to see? Because, you know, a lot of what Lance Blanks did, unfortunately, created a lot of situations and a lot of non-memorable moments and stuff that people are wanting to forget, which kind of leads into a little bit of what Jim would like to call his not top 10 of 2012-2013. I don't endorse this at all because I don't like to gloss on the negatives, but I have a feeling this is going to have some pretty hilarious moments as well as some moments that we want to slap our foreheads for. So I'm going to give you the floor, Jim. Let's start off with your, I don't know if you have them ranked or if you just want to talk about them, but let's jump into this not top 10.
Okay, I'll start on that. In terms of what you had said there, I think analytics is definitely part of the future of NBA basketball. And so if you're not on board, then you're missing the boat. It's just like technology and lots of other aspects. That's the way of the future. Computers, all the social media, everything like that. And people that don't adapt, I think, are being recalcitrant. They're actually being kind of inanely foolish. It's reminds me, I've used an example before, of back in the 40s and 50s where they were expanding electricity to rural areas, for somebody to be like, oh, I don't need that newfangled electricity, I'm just fine with my kerosene lamp. And it's like, no, that's a ridiculous way to look at things. You know, you have to adapt with the times. And I'd like that. And, you know, what would be good, I think, would be like maybe if we can get like a hybrid combo Daryl Morey, Sam Presti guy in here. I think that those kind of guys, that would be something good to emulate. If we could do that, we'd be doing really well. But the personality, I think, the ability to interact with the fans and everybody is very important, because that gives you, if you can endear yourself there a little bit, the people are much more forgiving when you make mistakes. Like when Steve Kerr had the moron meter and everything, he was very engaging with the fans. And so a lot of his misgivings, his, you know, areas where he didn't have the best judgment, some of his mistakes were kind of glossed over because he did have that. And I'd like to see, obviously, if Lance Blanks had made all the right decisions and he killed it with the draft picks and the player acquisitions and all that, and the team was back up to prominence again, then nobody'd care about the personality. But in my best of both worlds thing, I'd love to have, you know, somebody that actually performs the talent basketball side of it and could do the PR.
Yeah.
And now I will jump into the top 10 now that I have monopolized the end of that segment.
Boom.
So, not top 10. This is something I constructed real quick. These are my not top 10 moments of the 2012-2013 season. I'm actually going back to last summer after the last season ended, so I'm using that calendar year, and I can start again this year. But, you know, I'm obviously kind of copyright infringement on SportsCenter here. But so number 10, and we'll count down from 10 to 1, 1 being the worst. Number 10 on this is the front office's declaration that this team was more talented than last year's and would contend for a playoff position.
That was fun, wasn't it? I mean, I'm not going to pretend like I didn't bite that a little bit, because I looked at the roster and I said, you know, if Luis Scola's giving you 16 and 8, and Beasley's giving you 16, 18 points, and Goran Dragic is giving you 18 points, well, that was all a fool's errand there, because nobody averaged more than, what, 14.1 points a game for the season. So I thought, best case scenario, if those three guys led the team and did those kind of statistical numbers, that this was a, you know, 35 to 40 win team. Well, obviously none of those guys met those expectations, so my expectations were dramatically let down as well. So, yeah, that was definitely a fool's errand by me and the franchise, because I bit into that a little bit.
Yeah, I picked more wins, too, than they ended up with. Not a lot of Suns fans picked the total that they ended up with. Some of the national pundits did. But where I was kind of right is when I did my season preview of it, that I stated that the if you tell me how Michael Beasley and Markieff Morris play this year, then I'll tell you how the Suns season ends up.
Yeah.
And I think that was actually a very good weather vane, a good measuring stick. So
yeah, if someone had told me that that the leading scorer would be Goran Dragic at 14.1, I don't know if I'd put them in the cellar of the West, because there's some bad teams out here, but I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have gone anywhere near the win total I did.
Okay, next one I've got, number 9, counting down. I've got the 15 losses by 20-plus points.
Ah, brutal.
Yeah, those are kind of demoralizing as the season goes on. It's tough to see those kinds of losses, because a lot of the time it's a situation where the team quits. They get down, they're in a hole, and then they just seem disinterested. Like, they're just, please get the game over, I don't want to be out here anymore.
Yeah, we had a lot of those this year.
Yeah, 15. 15 is a lot of them. 15, that's, you know, close to one out of every five games that we got to enjoy that pleasure. And that will segue into my number 8 perfectly, because what I felt was the most embarrassing debacle of a game of the entire season, the biggest maelstrom, was the 117-77 loss to the inimitable Detroit Pistons.
There's really not a lot of words for losing by 40. And when that happened, a lot of people wrote a lot of words about that team losing by 40. That was just, was that mired in the 7-game losing streak, or was that separate from that? I can't recall, but that was just brutal. I know it was around that time frame, and, you know, a lot of games on the road, and you can make whatever excuse you want, but they basically played in front of a YMCA crowd, because Detroit doesn't get fans out to their games anymore, and got spanked by a team that finished in the bottom 10 just like they did. It's really no excuses for that.
Yeah, that vaunted Detroit Pistons team that I believe, is going to be picking, what, 8 in the lottery this year. So that's in a stadium, like you're saying, where if somebody in the stands boos, you can hear him clearly on the court because there's no sound whatsoever. It's, you know, a completely, you know, somber, funereal type of atmosphere in there.
Yeah, 5 more wins in the Suns that, or 4 more wins rather than the Suns that just amazing, immaculate, unstoppable offense that the Pistons offered.
Yeah, they ran into a juggernaut that night. So, number 7, we've got the franchise record home losing streak we had near the end of the season there.
Yeah, and in that they flirted with a franchise record losing streak in general. And I, you know, to be honest, just with the way the wins were kind of piling on top of each other, they just kind of melted into one another. I had no clue that they had gotten near that until they actually eclipsed it. So that just kind of shows you that the losing kind of melts into each other, and even us as writers sometimes can just, that stuff just glosses over us because it's just loss after loss. Oh, this was a historic one? Oh, okay.
Yeah, they just kind of blend in together after a while. It's like, what is that, highway hypnosis, something like that, the truck drivers get when they've been driving down the road and just the yellow lines melt one into another.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened this year.
So, now this one, number 6, maybe I have this a little bit higher just based on its proximity, its relative nearness, was that buzzer-beating goaltend against the Houston Rockets.
That was special.
I have never witnessed anything like that at an NBA game. So the Suns managed to find something uniquely futile during this run to, you know, the and the finish line, the terrible season that we experienced. So that one ranked up here because of its complete uniqueness.
Yeah, and how about the Houston Rockets and the Los Angeles Lakers, two playoff teams that the Suns would beat in a 7-game series, I think, if they matched up in the playoffs with the Suns. You know, obviously didn't make the playoffs, just teams that they matched up well against, except for when Jermaine O'Neal's attempting a rebound in the final seconds of a game. Then we don't match up very well with Houston.
Yeah, so maybe since I'm doing the not top 10, which is perfectly fitting based off of my more scathing, sarcastic, brooding, pessimistic personality, maybe you can do the top 10, and then those wins over the Lakers might be a part of that.
Yep.
Now, this next one, I'm going back to last summer. Like I had said that I was going to be going from basically the end of the last season to the end of this season. And here I have the handling of Steve Nash and Grant Hill leading up and during that free agency period.
Yeah, that was touched on a little bit by Lon today in the press conference, and I asked him about dragging his feet, not naively, but just the organization dragging their feet with the rebuild. We've debated back and forth, is this year 3 or is this year 1 of the rebuild? And, you know, he said that he felt that it was his duty to let those guys run their course and let those guys, you know, finish off a special era of Suns basketball. And I agree. I mean, on the surface, I completely agree with that statement. But in hindsight, the rebuild should have started 3 years ago, and you know, those guys should have been, you know, dealt off a little bit earlier. But, you know, it was nice to see those guys in a Suns uniform as long as they were, but it wasn't nice necessarily watching them try and lead a roster full of, you know, misfits to barely miss the playoffs 2 years in a row. And it was tough watching them in their formidable years kind of floundering around here in Phoenix.
Yeah, the biggest, not the biggest issue, but an interesting take that I had on it was where they didn't feel that Grant Hill was a good person to keep around in terms of teaching the youngsters and being a good clubhouse presence, that they didn't want to offer him some kind of one-year deal that could have worked for both sides and try to make that work. And Grant Hill, I don't think that there's any player in the league that is more respected than Grant Hill. He's right up at the top of the pantheon of NBA players. And so then, after they do this and alienate Grant Hill, and that relationship between him and Bobby is still at strained based off of that, now they come and they claim Scola on the amnesty waiver, and now the reason for him being here is because, well, we need a good veteran leadership in the clubhouse to, you know, keep around these young guys. It's like, well, you got Grant Hill. That doesn't make any sense. Louis Scola is not going to provide what Grant Hill did, so it seems like the team was kind of bipolar. I just really didn't understand a lot of went on last summer.
Yeah, I most of last summer, and to be honest, a lot of the decisions over the past 3 years kind of leave you scratching your head, leave you, you know, wanting. You see a lot of the moves, and you go, is this the move before the move before the move before the move? Because this is, you know, you're claiming that you're throwing a boulder in the ocean when you're throwing a pebble in a lake with some of these splashes that you're making. And that's what a lot of these moves were. And some of the signings, it was throwing like a toxicated pebble into a pond and letting the fish die. And that's kind of what happened with some of the off-season signings this year.
So we move on then. Number four, as we go down the list, the Los Angeles Lakers make the playoffs.
That's more of a you thing. I'll let you go ahead and talk on that one. That one, I said from the jump they were going to make the playoffs, and I went back and forth like every other person because they were winning and losing and losing and winning. But I'll let you take the floor on that one. That one wasn't a surprise, but it was kind of a punch to the stomach to the Suns' draft status that we'll talk about later.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely kick in the nuts. That was the icing on top of a dumpster fire right there. That was a fitting end to this deplorable year. But I had been on the record a long time. I was trying to get people to bet me that the Lakers wouldn't make the playoffs, because I was on the money side of that they were going to make the playoffs. And even back a while ago, I was talking about, well, that Rockets game could be a big one, because I think the Lakers have a chance to pass Houston too. And people were like, oh, they're not going to make it. And, you know, the majority of people seemed to be against me and my thought process. And I didn't want the Lakers to make it. I just thought that they were going to make it. And it doesn't do me any good to, you know, sit here and let my rooting interest delude me and blind me from trying to speak my mind, because I don't think that does a disservice to everybody. I think people would rather have, you know, candid responses from me than the glossed over thing where, you know, I'm rah 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 for the home team type of stuff. But, you know, I did turn out to be right, and it was really close. The Suns, you know, did their best by beating the tar out of the Lakers to try to keep them out of the playoffs, but yeah, we lose the 14th, and we're going to end up picking somewhere around 30. And that was just a very bad end to a bad season.
Yeah, that was like you've already had the bad season. You're already down, and then someone just decided as they're walking by, like, you get jumped by five guys, and, you know, the other four guys took care of business, and you're laying on the ground, and the fifth guy just decides to kick you as they're walking away. That's basically what happened with going from having the 13th or 14th pick to now having 30.
Yeah, after they broke my ribs, they started burning me with lit cigarettes.
So, yeah, that terrible three. Smoker, that number five guy, he's always such a bad smoker.
So we're on to number three, and number three for me is the head coaching fiasco midseason.
Yeah, I was 100% not on board with, A, the letting go of Alvin Gentry in general. You can call it a mutual parting ways if you'd like. It was basically do what we tell you to do, or we don't need you anymore, and he didn't want to do it. But, yeah, I was 100% against them letting him go in the first place, and the way that they handled it with Marley and Turner and those guys was just, it was, I mean, hindsight, they'll look back, and maybe these guys will have a conversation about it, Babby and company, on just that they definitely mishandled that, but that was... Lance Blanks was the face of that again, so I'll leave you with that. Lance Blanks was the face and the spokesman of that whole move.
Yeah, I think that's what Babby was kind of hinting at. He sort of alluded to it in a non-direct fashion, that basically saying, and I'll be paraphrasing here, that they weren't happy with the way that people within the organization were being treated. And I thought that was a direct reflection on Lance Blanks and the way he had handled situations like this, because it was just grossly mishandled in terms of the way they did it. And regardless of whether you were an Alvin Gentry supporter like I was, I didn't see any reason why. Just let him play out the year and then you can part ways. I don't know what they gained by doing this. I'm not sure exactly what was going on internally, but Alvin has seemed kind of bitter after that. I've heard him speak about it, and it doesn't seem like a mutual parting to me. It seems like he's, you know, still has some hurt feelings over the situation. But, yeah, the way they alienated these former Suns, Dan Marley, Suns icon, and J. just it left a bad taste in the mouth, I think, of the vast majority of the fans, that they just weren't really happy with the way that went down.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree with that one. So now we're into the top two. So what are we looking at the top two final kicks to the stomach here for Suns fans? Because that's what you're doing to them.
Top two is the second most losses in franchise history, the second worst record. And I don't really include the inaugural season, that incipient season. That doesn't really count to me, because obviously as an expansion team like that, you're supposed to be horrible. So to me, I would say this really goes down as the worst season in Suns franchise history.
I don't disagree. You know, kind of came up almost on the longest losing streak ever, got the longest home losing streak in their back pocket, flirted with franchise futility for points scored, I think 4 to 5 times, a couple of those times at home, which was kind of embarrassing. Yeah, I don't disagree. Pardon me, I don't disagree on that at all. You know, it's definitely, in my opinion, the worst season in Suns basketball.
Okay, and so now we're on to one. And do you have something, some sound effect, or you can, like, hit something to give me a drum roll?
You get no drum roll for a not top 10. you get nothing for, like I said, continuing to kick the Suns fans in the stomach here tonight.
Oh, it's a good-natured ribbing. Okay, number one, and I can leave this just as simple as possible here, and it is Michael Beasley.
And if you guys are obviously listening to this, basically what Jim just did is he dropped the mic and he walked away. So that's it for him on the podcast. That's all he really needs to say to finish up a not top 10 list for Phoenix Suns. Question for you, Jim. Outside of a drug epidemic in the late 80s, would the Michael Beasley signing be in your not top 10 for Phoenix Suns franchise history?
Well, they've made a couple other really bad signings and trades, but that has to be somewhere, I would say, in the top 5. And as far as free agent signings, I mean, it's got to be right near the top, because there's been some bad trades. I didn't like the Barkley trade, where we got the guys from the Rockets that basically, you know, spit in the franchise's face. The fact that Robert Horry ever donned a Phoenix Suns uniform still gives me nightmares. That wasn't a good situation at all. And then if we go back to the 80s, where they managed to get swindled out of Dennis Johnson, that was obviously a very poor decision. So they've had some definite blemishes on the record. But even if we look at, like, the Josh Childress situation on that contract, and he basically provided nothing and then got amnestied, well, Michael Beasley had a pernicious effect on the Suns franchise this season. He's not a good locker room guy. He's not a motivated guy. And I was telling you, Ray put up a story on the site about how Michael Beasley basically had one of the worst seasons in the history of the NBA in terms of offensive win shares and some of the other metrics like that. Because basically, people as bad as Michael Beasley do not get the time to continue screwing up that poorly. And that was just looking at the offensive side of the basketball, which was supposed to be a quasi-strength, because he sure as hell isn't playing defense.
Yeah, no, when he played defense, he was more engaged on offense. You know, that's the fallback quote for guys like Lindsey Hunter this year is, as long as you say that, then it almost makes it seem okay that Michael Beasley is pretty poor. But yeah, I mean, I saw that there, that he was in the offensive win shares. He was in that group of, you know, some of the worst in the history of the NBA, and, you know, only one this past decade, and only a few. Actually, the only two players in the past 20, 25 years that were even in the conversation were him and Jim Jackson, which is a little bit embarrassing for basketball when you're lumped into that group.
Yeah, that was terrible. And so the Suns are going to have another decision to make with him. I think that's obviously a discussion that I would be shocked if they don't at least have the discussion on whether it's possible to either waive or stretch Michael Beasley. That is not somebody I want around our young players, our rookies in this draft. That would be a horrible situation. I can see it now, and it makes me shake, cringe, that that we could use our top five pick, go out and get this young, talented guy, and then he makes best friends with Michael Beasley. That would just be a horrible situation. And, you know, Michael Beasley says that he doesn't pay attention to anyone. Well, I really hope that he's shown the door and they kick his ass on the way out, and that way we don't have to pay attention to him anymore either.
You know what? And that's a conversation that I want you to go, while you're shaking, I want you to go get some tea, some herbal tea, go get a blanket, go, you know, curl up in the corner and read your thesaurus. And what we're going to do is we're going to table that discussion for next week, and we'll bring that around. It basically, you know, if you guys want to jump in on the comment section now for that, but, you know, basically, you know, what should the Suns do with Michael Beasley? You know, straight cut, stretch provision, or keep him around and see if you can turn this thing around? Because the guy's clearly talented, but obviously, you know, a lot more things come than just talented. Jamarcus Russell was extremely talented as well. We've seen where that's gone, a different sport, different topic. But so we'll table that for now. We'll jump back into that next week. But that's episode 20. Any parting shots after you've been throwing punches all night, Jim?
I know. My arms are tired. I think my knuckles are sore. I should have worn gloves. I'm kind of sore all over. I was playing volleyball this past weekend, and, man, they need a little more sand on that court. So I was kind of tearing up my feet a little bit. But I did get a nice compliment that somebody said, wow, do you have a 36-inch vertical or something? And that made me feel like I was young again. But, hey, you gotta get your small victories where you can. I mean, not much chance I have to actually feel good about myself. I have to practice humility a lot more, because usually, and I'm not humiliated, I'm saying humility, because I have to kind of keep things measured and in perspective. And that's what I hope the Suns do, is keep things measured and in perspective as they're doing their ongoing search for the new GM. And like I had previously mentioned, I did put that resume up online, and if Lon Babby wants to give me a call, anything like that, we can throw about some things, you know, roll around some things that I think that the Suns should do with the organization. He can pick my brain. I'm here for him anytime to solicit my advice. I'd be more than happy to go over it with him. We could do lunch, anything like that, or he could even come on the podcast and we can engage in some nice back and forth on here, a little bit of persiflage on the air.
Sounds good. Well, you know what? Then we'll definitely look forward to doing that. And that'll be a wrap. So we appreciate the listen, guys. The Suns season is over, but the podcast is going to keep trucking along. We'll apparently, with 36-inch vertical, we'll see Jim at the NBA Draft Combine. But up until we get to the Draft Combine in mid-May, it's going to be all about, you know, recapping the season, talking about the different things that have happened and that need to happen for this team. And then right about mid-May, we're just going to take off with draft coverage. So, you know, keep tuning in, keep listening, keep reading the website, and you'll continue getting nonstop Suns coverage around the clock. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll talk to you next week.